Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. And tonight I have with us a really great guest. His name is Dr. David Hanscom. He's a spine surgeon who has brought into reality the treatment of back pain without surgery, so along with his amazing story. Thank you, Dr. Hanscom, for taking the time to come on my show tonight.
Well, thank you very much for asking. I'm very delighted to be here.
My pleasure, really. I'm grateful to have you. Would you tell us a little bit about you before we get started and where people can find you and find your book, Back in Control, A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain?
I am a spine surgeon. I work out of Swedish Hospital in Seattle, Washington. I have been practicing spine surgery since 1986, and I am a surgeon who spent about 10 years doing aggressive spine surgery. And around 2001, I developed a process where people could get better without surgery. And I evolved out of this, evolved a book called Back in Control, A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. I now give talks on enjoying the management of chronic pain, which from a surgeon's perspective is unusual. And it's been by far the most rewarding part of my practice of watching people's pain not only diminish, but actually disappear most of the time. And I put together a website called www.back-in-control.com. And what I realized about 3 years ago is that most of the work being done by my patients was being done on their own. I was having very little to do with it. And the website became the action plan for the book. So it's become a very rewarding process to watch people just, I simply become an observer of people's own healing.
So you have another website, too, if you would just tell people that.
The websites basically all go to the same website. There's several different names for it. There's drdavidhanscom.com. There's also the docproject.com, doccproject.com. But they all end up at the same website of a five-stage process.
Okay. And just so that they understand, how do you spell your website,
Dr. David Hanscom? B-A-C-K hyphen. N-I-N-control, C-O-N-T-R-O-L.com, backincontrol.com with a hyphen between the words.
Okay. And then your last name is, how do you spell that?
Hanscom, H-A-N as in Nancy, S, C as in Charlie, O, M as in Mary, Hanscom.
Great. So you came about this discovery in a very unorthodox way. Can you tell us about that?
What happened, I came out of my spine fellowship in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is considered one of the top spine fellowships in the world. I was taught to do very major complex spinal deformity surgery, and I came out of my fellowship with a zeal. I also hit Seattle in 1986, where a new plate called a Steffi plate came into play, which allowed us to obtain a spine fusion most of the time. And I would describe myself as extremely enthusiastic. I felt I was doing the right thing, doing these spine fusions for back pain. And from 1986 to about 1994, I was very, very active doing fusions for back pain. In 1993, a paper was published in the state of Washington that showed that the results or the return of work rate 1 year after a spine fusion for back pain in the state of Washington workers' comp system was 15%, 15%. The return of work rate 2 years after a spine fusion was 22%. Then I also saw that my own patients weren't getting better that often, and then people's spines started breaking down around my fusions. In 1993, I just quit. I said, look, this is not working. And from 1993 until around 2000, I really just did the best I could doing structural surgeries and was still very busy doing deformity surgery, but I quit doing fusions for back pain. And then around 2000, 2001, I had just come out of a major burnout myself. And as I started sharing my stress management tools with patients, And the idea was that if I can't solve your pain with surgery, I'll at least give you some strategies to help cope with the pain. People started getting better. And as I started getting better and started sharing my tools with my patients, a whole process started to evolve. But I'm one of the few surgeons who's been on both sides of this fence, being extremely aggressive doing the surgery, and then learning that really spine surgery for back pain really rarely, if ever, works.
So what did your peers think about you when you started, or the hospital administration? My friend, my best friend, owns a chain of hospitals, and I can't imagine her smiling if one of her surgeons said, don't get surgery. What did they say?
It's been a very rocky road. I think in medicine in general, we're used to fixing things. Patients expect us to fix things. Somehow, the idea of surgery being the definitive answer, if nothing else works, has become sort of the standard. But surgery only works if you can see it. And the problem is that the process costs essentially nothing. It's very self-directed. I just wrote an op-ed for, hopefully, a paper I'll turn it into shortly, on medical industrial complexes upon us. Essentially, every procedure we offer for chronic pain, such as cortisone injections, surgeries, different types of physical therapies, et cetera, can all be helpful at a limited level, but none of them really solve chronic pain. However, all of them are major profit centers for the hospitals. And so I've had a lot of pushback from the hospital as far as this whole project. I mean, they basically felt that it's odd for a surgeon to talk to their patients.
Oh, I think it's great what you're doing. So let's talk about, you've broken this down to 5 stages. And these, even though these stages sound very simple, you have them so that your intention is for them to be done over a period of months or a period
right.
of weeks to months. So it's not just read them and move on. You have a strategy behind them. Could you talk about them, please?
What I found out that with any type of pain, whether it's acute or chronic, the body sends signals to the brain in the form of neurological impulses. I call them pathways. And the source of the pain can be a structural problem, which means you can see it on a test, and it has matching symptoms. If the symptoms don't match, then it's not a structural lesion. The most common source of pain, of course, is the soft tissues. Probably 80% of the pain that we see in orthopedics is soft tissues. What people don't understand is that the soft tissues are loaded with millions of pain fibers per square inch. It's just absolutely loaded with pain fibers. So even though you can't see it on a test, why it still hurts. And then the third thing we'll talk about later is called the mind-body syndrome, where the brain simply short circuits and the pain switches turn on without an obvious cause. But what happens is that these pain impulses come into the brain so quickly that the pathways become permanent very fast. So it's just like an athlete or an artist or a musician learning a skill. The brain lays down a substance called myelin that forms these pathways. And with repetition, this myelin becomes very thick. Myelin is similar to the insulation around a wire, is that the thicker the myelin or the thicker the insulation around a wire, the faster the conduction of the electricity through the wire, same thing in the brain. And what happens that pain impulses come in so fast that we think these pain pathways become permanent in about 2 or 3 months. And once a pathway is in your brain, it's absolutely permanent. What makes it more difficult, though, is that if you put your hand over a hot stove, your anxiety goes up and you remove your hand. If I took your hand and forced you to hold your hand over the stove, not only would your anxiety go up, your anger frustration level would go through the ceiling. It turns out that anxiety and anger are also pathways issues also. They're not psychological. They're a pathway. So pain is always connected to anxiety and frustration, which then changes the body's chemistry, but they're also linked pathways. They say neurons that fire together, wire together. So in addition to anxiety being connected to pain, you now amplify the signal dramatically by adding on the anxiety and frustration because more parts of the brain are firing and the body chemistry changes. So with repetition, the brain becomes very sensitized and then memorizes these circuits. and you evolve into a process that just becomes brutal. And I think that chronic pain is probably the worst part of the human experience. Nobody can see it. Nobody trusts you. Everybody thinks you're faking it. People are labeled. You're totally trapped, which makes the frustration factor even worse. And it's a really, really tough experience. And so what we have found out in simplistic terms, and we can go into more detail later, is that by simply calming down the nervous system, the perception of pain can change dramatically, and eventually it goes away.
So is that what it is? Is it perception, or is it really happening? Will it go? Does it go away? Does these neural pathways go away, or are they etched into the Etch-a-Sketch?
Well, the pathways are permanent. There is a doctor by Dr. Schubner back in Detroit who I've worked with a lot. And he wrote a book called Unlearn Your Pain, and he and I were talking the other day, and you really cannot unlearn the pathways. In other words, the pathways are permanent. But what you can do is that you can, what we call them somatic tools, you can actually create alternate pathways around the old pathways, and you literally can sculpt a new nervous system. The new pathways don't contain pain pathways. They don't have anxiety. And what happens as you start creating these new workaround pathways, at some tipping point, the pain switches actually turn off. And it's unbelievable. I mean, people 20, 30, 40 years of chronic pain have the pain completely disappear.
So I have a question just to help people understand, especially particularly medical professionals. Are these pathways something that you can see on an MRI or other kind of imaging machine, or what is this thing?
It's tricky. There's a book out people read called The Talent Code by Dan Coyle, and what he does, he links the formation of talent with artists, musicians, and athletes to neuroscience research that looks at myelin, and for instance, in Albert Einstein's brain, why there's a very distinct spot that's just heavily myelinated, which is considered the mathematical part of the brain. And so you can see it through pathology. They have a test now called a functional MRI scan, and I'll give you a couple examples how that works. We do know that in chronic pain that people's brains actually shrink. And we do know that as you treat chronic pain, that people's brains actually re-expand. I was taught in medical school that you have a certain amount of brain mass at birth, and that you can only lose your brain mass as you go forward. That isn't true. They did another study published in 2006, which showed where they studied medical students' brains the month before they started medical school. Then they scanned them 3 months later, which is a pretty intense medical school learning process. And when they rescanned the medical students' brains 3 months after medical school started, those two parts of the brain had enlarged. And when they scanned them 6 months later, the enlargement remained. They've also found out, for instance, in fibromyalgia, that I used to think that was basically a psychological disease. Nobody could see it. Patients didn't have much of a pain threshold. And I've since learned that in fibromyalgia, on these functional MRI scans, that the entire brain lights up like a Christmas tree. The brain literally is short-circuiting. And when the pain switches on, the pain switches on. It doesn't matter why it's on. The body feels the actual physical pain.
I'm curious, when you say the brain lights up, is it constantly lit up, or is it would it be like flashing? Would it be like constant
that
erratic firing of signals?
That part I'm not totally sure. I can give you another functional MRI scan experiment that might help you a little bit. For instance, in 2004, there's a very well-done study on a Scandinavia that showed that what they did, they took volunteers and they put a pressure stimulus on people's thumbs. And on the functional MRI scan, there's a certain part of the brain that would light up. And the volunteers were people that did not have chronic pain. Then they took a group of patients who had chronic pain for just 3 or more months, and when they put the exact same stimulus on these people's thumbs, 5 parts of the brain lit up. The brain was 500% more reactive for the same stimulus just by the repetition of the impulses. So the brain becomes very, very sensitized to repetition, and it physically reacts.
That makes so much sense. So now I have a question. I have a friend she's a physician up in Maine, and she does, I can't think of the word. It's a methylation genetic test.
Okay.
So I was looking through, I interviewed her a while back, and I was looking through, she did the test on me, and I was looking through the genetic sequences that came back, and one of them just happened to be a gene that indicated fibromyalgia.
Okay.
So is there a connection, or would it be different kinds? I don't have that, but I guess that maybe it means I'm predisposed or could be or something. But does that mean that fibromyalgia is something that's genetic, or is it something that you can develop because mine's out of whack? What does that mean? Different kind
of
fibromyalgia?
I honestly have to bow out on the question. I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
About the
genetic. That's all right.
I do know, obviously, with different diseases, there's genetic predispositions. And my position has been for a while, it doesn't really matter exactly. In other words, once the circuits are there, they're there. Unless you're genetically predisposed to that process, you have it. So we know the process is now in place. You have fibromyalgia. What we're finding out that you can literally reprogram your brain around almost anything. And I think a dramatic example of that is Pavlov's dogs. He has an experiment that's not nearly as well known as his appetite experiments with dogs. I mean, most people with Pavlov remember in college days that Pavlov associated he gave the dogs food and connected that with the ringing of a bell, and pretty soon the ringing of the bell would elicit the same response as the dog food. He also did another experiment where he programmed his dogs to seek an electric shock on a panel for food. And they would actually actively put their paw on the electrical panel to get the food. And I'm not sure they thought it was pleasurable, but it certainly did not elicit pain. What was fascinating about the experiment is that if you put the other paw on the electrical panel, the shock was strong enough that the dog would scream. So the programming was paw-dependent. So my concept with my own personal experience, watching many, many patients go through this process, and we literally probably have 600 or 700 patients that are pain-free after 10, 20, 30 years of chronic pain, that I'm convinced that you can program almost around anything.
Okay. I think that's very interesting. So now let's talk about your stages, because people are, I'm sure, that are laying there with chronic pain listening to this show is going to have difficulty believing that they can change this pain where they've been told there is no help or nothing's wrong. So where do they start?
Right.
Stage one.
The stage one is anxiety. Stage two is anger. Stage three is going from reactive to creative. Stage four is an organizational stage. You literally take back your life. And then stage five is what I call the spiritual journey. And I'll go back over those again a little bit more slowly. But anxiety is not an emotion. It's a reflex. It's a mental reflex where something causes anxiety and your body generally automatically reacts. There's a pre-programmed response for most things that cause anxiety.
So I have a question here. Sorry.
Okay.
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Sure.
So what does neurotransmitters such as norepinephrine or cortisol play with anxiety? Anything, or is it something? What causes I'm not sure if it's central nervous system, autonomic nervous system, what it is. What causes it to get erratic?
Well, again, if you look at anxiety as the link that causes the body's chemical response, then things start making sense. In other words, something causes anxiety. For instance, if a dog jumps out at you, it almost bites you, but doesn't touch you. Your body secretes adrenaline, secretes cortisol. It's a fight or flight type mechanism. So it was the thought that the dog would attack you that caused the body to secrete the chemistry. So the anxiety is that link to the whole set of chemical responses that I would call an emotion of fear, whatever you want to call it. But there's a mental reflex that causes a link to behavior. There's a repetition, and the problem with chronic pain is that chronic pain causes intense anxiety. The repetition, of course, is endless, and the anxiety pathways, which exist in other parts of your life anyway, get markedly reinforced in the presence of chronic pain. And again, that comment about neurons that fire together, wire together, is that pain is always connected with anxiety and frustration. The reason why we deal with anxiety first is that anger and anxiety are actually the same thing. In other words, anger is loss of control. What causes the need for control is anxiety. when you lose control of a situation that causes anxiety, you become anxious, you become angry and frustrated. So anger is essentially anxiety on steroids. That's why you have to do the anxiety work first, because if you simply take away anger, you're now exposed to raw anxiety. By the way, anger, when you feel anger, you feel vulnerable, you feel very powerful. When you're anxious, you feel very vulnerable.
Yeah, you're actually, so right.
Yeah, when you're actually angry, you're not feeling much anxiety. That's why people have a hard time giving up anger, because it really covers up that feeling of raw anxiety. I think that the feeling of raw anxiety is probably the worst sensation in the human experience, because it's a survival feeling, and it just you just can't tolerate it. And again, I think I told you earlier in a conversation we had offline that I was in this raw anxiety state for almost 10 years. It was just brutal. And there's nothing worse than raw anxiety, and then chronic pain on top of it just makes it intolerable.
If you're open, I'd love you to tell that story, because when people tell humanistic stories, people really get it. They
yeah.
know that you understand.
Well, what happened in around early 1990s is that I became a major spine surgeon not by experiencing anxiety. I became a major spine surgeon by suppressing anxiety. In fact, when I was 28 years old, I had a patient come into my service with an anxiety disorder. I actually had to look the word up because I didn't know what the word meant. I didn't know what anxiety was. I was just blazing through everything 1,000 miles an hour. And around 10 years later, in my late 30s, I started having anxiety attacks, reactions. And I'm going, what's this? And I calmed down for a little bit, did a little bit of counseling. Things got better for a while. And then I had some personal issues that became very intense, and my anxiety became extreme, and I started not sleeping. I had uncontrollable anxiety. I had endless repetitive intrusive thoughts. I actually evolved into a full-blown obsessive-compulsive disorder, which, by the way, is considered uncurable. And an obsessive-compulsive disorder is the ultimate anxiety experience, because talk about losing control. Remember, anger is loss of control. But when you lose control of anxiety itself, it's like a nuclear reaction taking place. There's nothing that stops it. And for 7 years, I was in what was called the abyss in my terms. So I had burning in my feet, ringing in my ears, couldn't sleep, extreme anxiety, chronic pain in my back, my legs, my tendonitis. I had 16 of these 33 symptoms of what's called mind-body syndrome. And I just didn't know what to do. Nobody told me about this. Nobody told me what to do. I saw counselors. I saw every medication you can imagine. I tried every self-help books, seminars, you name it, and nothing really seemed to work. And in 2002, I was really not going to make it through this whole process. And I happened to pick up this book called Feeling Good by David Burns. And David Burns said to write. And by the way, going back to our model here, the one step that pulled me out of this tailspin was a simple act of running down negative thoughts and throwing them away. It happens to be the foundation of the entire project, because what happens with anxiety / pain / anger, they're pathways. They are permanent. What the writing does, I think, is that you don't have that thought on paper. There's a space between you and the piece of paper. You've separated. So you can't control the thoughts, but you can separate from them. Somehow the body internalizes that, because that is now connected to vision and feel. The first step I have my patients do to work on anxiety is to start writing down negative thoughts and simply tearing them up and throwing them away immediately. The reason why you're tearing them up is not to get rid of them, because remember, the pathways are permanent. The idea is to be able to write with absolute freedom. And the more difficult the thoughts you can get on paper, the more powerful the process. And then I have people go from free writing, just negative thoughts, to this book, Feeling Good by David Burns. And he has you do a process of writing down the negative thoughts, and you categorize those into 10 different distortions of thinking. Then in the third column, you write down the more appropriate thought. And what that does, there's three parts of reprogramming. There's awareness, detachment, and reprogramming. What the writing does, it does awareness and detachment in one step. And then the reprogramming occurs in terms of mindfulness meditation, could be acupuncture, massage, the weight room, I think physical therapy, weight room, massage, are all giving you different neurological input. But the sequence seems to be the core of the whole project of the awareness, detachment, reprogramming. And that seems to be one of the main core concepts that seems to be a little different about the project that seems to help people break through the circuits. And so I started writing in around 1999 because I didn't know what else to do. And I'm sorry, 2002. And within 6 weeks, things started to change. And with my patients also, once I can get them to start writing, within 2 to 4 weeks, things start to change. And it happens very, very quickly. And it's not something I made up or invented. It came out of Harvard in 1987, where this Dr. Wegner, in a research paper, simply demonstrated when you try not to think about something, you think about it more. When you write down the actual series of thoughts you're trying to suppress, it breaks up the cycle. And it's the core of the entire project. It's not the final solution, but it is the foundation of the entire project. It's a simple act of writing down negative thoughts and throwing them away. And then by 2003, I finally figured out that I had anger issues, which I thought I did not have anger issues. The reality was I wasn't connected to my anger issues. And within 6 months after I truly processed the anger issues, essentially every one of my symptoms disappeared.
That's amazing. You said something, this happened in the early to mid-90s.
Right.
I want to tell you something that happened then. Have you ever heard of the Institute of Noetic Sciences?
I have heard of it briefly.
It's been a long time since I interviewed them. I mean, probably 7 or 8 years. But the last time I did, they told me about a research study that they had done that had to do with spiritual epiphanies, or no, not religious thing, but spiritual epiphanies, you know, where you wake up to some bigger, higher purpose or knowing, like you did.
Right.
And they did either a 20 or 30 year study, I can't remember. And they found out that in the early to mid-1990s, and this is exactly when my thing happened, and almost everybody I know it happened, all of the scientists that I know it happened at this time, there were more documented cases of spiritual epiphanies than ever before in the history of time.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Something's happening. I don't know what, but something's happening. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just didn't connect
those dots. That's very interesting. I mean, I do think that if you, I don't know a lot about quantum mechanics and physics, but obviously there's energy fields that connect all of us at a very deep level. And I think that everybody is personally, I mean, what I've realized the last couple of years is that my book is not a formula, and the book is about connection. And what the book does, it helps calm down the chaos in your mind so you can reconnect with who you are. There's three parts to healing, and I'll add a fourth, is that it needs to be structured. All aspects of pain need to be dealt with at the same time. And then the third part, which is the most critical, is that once you know those variables, you take charge. As you take charge, you begin to connect to who you are, who you used to be, and who you want to be. Once you connect with who you are, I cannot stop you from getting better. You will get better. And again, there's not a formula. Everybody does it completely differently. I had one incredible patient who was in a wheelchair since 1990. She had had two spine surgeries that probably did not need to be done. She then collapsed her spine over the top of her fusion and couldn't stand up. I mean, literally, when she stood up, her chest was parallel with the floor. And she came to me in April 2010, and she was smoking two packs per day, had a pain pump in place, was on 600 milligrams of oxycodone per day. She was so sedated that she couldn't even talk to me. I said, look, I can't really help you out. I said, here's my book. Take a look. I'll see you back in a couple weeks. Well, much to my surprise, she came back. So I'm looking at her and going, well, God, I still can't really do anything. I said, I'll tell you what, if you can quit smoking, then we'll talk. So she disappeared for almost 8 months, and one day she shows up and she had quit smoking. Now I'm going, now what do I do? So to make a long story short, we sent her to rehab, physical therapy. We started stabilizing medications. We had her gain about 20 pounds to get her nutritional status built back up. A year ago, we did one operation through her chest. We did a second operation 6 weeks later, and we were able to get her standing up perfectly straight. And she's off all medications, no pain pump, no wheelchair, and now just get rid of her cane. She's completely ambulatory after 20 years in a wheelchair.
Really?
And so it's exciting to watch, but you know what started her process, the reason why I'm telling the story? I mean, I'm excited about my role in it and helping her out and coordinating things. I'm excited about that. But when you really talk to her, the one thing that got her going is that she wanted to be a grandmother. She had a young grandchild. She was about 5 years old, and she had missed 20 years with her own kids, and she wanted to be a grandmother. That's what got her going, is that connection with who she wanted to be. That's the story.
That's an amazing story. You know, I'd love if you. I know you have a couple more stories. I'd love to hear another one if you have one.
I had another gentleman was around 35 years old. He was the son of one of my colleagues. He came in with total body pain, burning in his feet, and was very skeptical about the whole process that I was going to talk to him about. And he came back once, came back a second time, and I really didn't think he was going to engage. And he had gone to dropping out of law school to being a clerk. And over about 6 months, with very little input from myself, his symptoms disappeared. And last I heard, he's now in about his third year of medical school and just moving forward at a very powerful place. I've seen some people go to pain-free within two to four weeks. I had one gentleman who had 30 years of thigh pain, and it took a few months to get him to engage. And I really didn't think there's any hope for him at all. But one day I was sitting there talking to him, and he had every diagnostic test you can imagine. And a very quiet guy, super nice guy, about 70 years old. And he goes, you know, I got a lot on my plate. And he told me his family issues of some severely disabled kids, very unhealthy wife, and he just was carrying the entire load of the world on his shoulders. And within about 4 to 6 weeks after that conversation, doing the writing exercises, going through the process, he went to pain-free, which absolutely shocked me. I had no expectation of that one at all. But we probably have 600 or 700 patients now that are absolutely pain-free, and the story is very consistent that if somebody wants to engage, it's just a matter of time. I've had a couple patients who I've been at this with them for about a year with no success, and I've given up. And they gave up, I give up, and we go, look, we tried really hard. It's not going to work. We just have to try something else. And about 6 months later, after both of them quit seeing me, Both of them had gotten reengaged with their churches and really had redeveloped their social circles, et cetera. In other words, their nervous system had moved onwards. And both of them emailed me that they were pain-free, full function, no pain, no medications. So it's really just a matter of time. I don't know whether it's a short time or a long time. But once you start calming down the nervous system, your body's perception of pain just changes dramatically.
So can we talk about exactly what you have developed a system. What do they do to deal with this anxiety and this anger? How do they start? What do they do? I know they write down, but how do they write it down?
Well, what I did is with these stages, I say, look, it takes a long time for your brain to be the way it is, usually 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it is, and you can't rush the stages. And so the first thing I have them do, even before they start to really read my book, is simply start the writing exercises. Because day zero is the day you start to write. And I've been writing for 15 years. When I quit writing, my symptoms come back.
Give me an example of what you write down. Please.
Well, I I deal with some adverse politics at work, and I get very reactive. People aren't giving me enough credit, et cetera, or, you know, why are they doing this? It's not fair. So just all the thoughts about not being fair, not good enough, not respecting me, whatever you want to talk about, that all these patterns are in our brains are just put down on paper. For instance, one pattern I happen to have is anxiety with success. If things are going really, really well, I become incredibly anxious. So I just write down those anxiety-producing thoughts. So they're not rational. They're just crazy thoughts, and every human being has these. What's fascinating to me is that every human being does have these thoughts. And again, by nature of the idea that we suppress negative thoughts, everybody's negative thoughts become stronger. And so this is a universal experience, but people spend a huge amount of energy trying to appear that they don't have anxiety. Everybody has anxiety.
Yeah.
And so by simply doing the simple act of writing things down, throwing them away, changes the game dramatically.
So there is a checklist, Do You Have Mind-Body Syndrome? And we have 20 minutes, okay? So I want to talk
right.
about this checklist, and you can talk about any, after you tell us about that, you can talk about whatever you want to talk about for the rest of the show.
Okay.
So you would just tell people how they know if they have it.
Well, first of all, everybody has it. Once you look at this checklist, you realize that every human being has at least 3 to 5 of these mind-body syndrome symptoms. And the list comes from Dr. Howard Schubner's book out of Detroit. It's his chapter 5 called Unlearn Your Pain. And what happens is that anxiety is the core symptom of mind-body syndrome that just drives a lot of symptoms. But I wrote a little website post called My Struggle with Mind-Body Syndrome. So my list was things like migraine headaches, ringing in my ears, burning in my feet, back pain, posterior thoracic pain. Other symptoms include different tendonitises, anxiety, insomnia, PTSD, fibromyalgia, TMJ, all these different pain symptoms, different insomnia, anxiety, really just represent a fired-up nervous system. And again, every human being has at least 3 to 5 of these. I think my experience was a little extreme, but nonetheless, every one of my 16 symptoms is essentially gone. The whole simplistic explanation is you're simply trying to calm down the nervous system. And the category of tools you're using to do that is what we call somatic tools, where you simply are connecting thoughts with physical sensations. And that's where things like soft music, massage, light touch therapies, different mindfulness meditation techniques, anything that can simply calm down the nervous system has a tremendous effect. And what happens, you're simply decreasing the reactivity of your brain to a negative impulse, whether some outside source causing anxiety or your pain response, response to pain, you're simply de-amplifying the signal in a way that simply the perception of pain drops down dramatically. So it's the fun part for me, not only does pain disappear, people's anxiety drops, they re-expand their social circles, their family life improves. It just is an endless, expansive experience. It becomes incredibly enjoyable to watch.
So, let's see. There was something else I wanted to talk to. It comes in different steps in this thing. I'd like for
right.
you to tell us what it covers. The first one is symptoms.
Right.
The second one is your childhood, I guess. Can
well,
you talk to us about
so
what
that's a little
for?
Different. His pathway is a little different than mine, which I think is an excellent pathway. So his point is he's going after the triggers, and Dr. Schubner and I talk about this all the time, in that when you have a traumatic event in the past and you have a situation in the current time that reproduces that sequence of impulses, the symptoms recur. So the classic story he tells of it is of a physician who is in a helicopter during Vietnam, and he was shot down, and he has severe injury to his left leg. Once or twice a year for the next 10 years after Vietnam, he would have the symptoms that were almost identical to the ones that occurred in Vietnam, and nobody could find anything wrong. One day, about 10 years after Vietnam, he was walking in the park with his wife, and the symptoms recurred suddenly. He literally fell to the ground, and the symptoms would usually last 1 day or 2 days, sometimes up to a week or two. And when he fell to the ground, his wife looked at him and goes, "Did you hear the helicopter?" Well, he actually hadn't heard the helicopter, but his brain had. And that connection of that helicopter sound with the prior injury set off the symptoms. And what Dr. Schumann does in his book brilliantly is he just goes trigger after trigger after trigger, but they're phenomenal stories about how the brain, how these brain circuits get connected to each other. So it's not psychological, they're just connected circuits.
That's amazing.
So what he does in his book, he goes through a sequential system of childhood events. I have one girl, by the way, who had a very compelling story you could read on my Amazon site under We Are Not Broken. But a patient who had a tough set of series of events back when she was about 14 years old, they failed scoliosis surgery, infection, bracing. And what happened is that she went into chronic pain for 18 years. She came back to see me a few months ago, and she had read my book. She decided to go call this Hoffman process. And within 4 months after she started this process, after 18 years, she was absolutely pain-free. But she described to me that the symptoms that she was having were very similar to the symptoms that she had when she's being braced as an adolescent for scoliosis, the constriction around her ribs, the sensations of being, the breathing sensations. So her brain really connected with those actual sensations of what she had in the brace. What was interesting with her as she went through this 8-day Hoffman process is that she actually engaged the muscles that were bothering her. That's when the pain disappeared.
What do you mean engage them?
Well, the Hoffman process is an 8-day process. It does about five years of this reprogramming in about 8 days. I went through the process about 4 years ago. The book never would have been written without Hoffman. And what it does, it allows you to understand, it does this awareness reprogramming in a very brilliant sequence. In other words, they have a very organized awareness process about where your patterns came from. They have a very intense detachment process, which is very physical, and they have just a brilliant, brilliant reprogramming process. So with this one patient is during this detachment phase, which is a very physical phase of Hoffman. Again, it's all somatic tools, not a major life philosophy. You're simply learning very specific somatic tools. And she actually engaged the muscles in her back that were sore physically and came right at it with a new set of impulses. That's when her pain disappeared.
That's an amazing story. You've got a lot of amazing stories.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, for me as a surgeon, I'm just absolutely flabbergasted. I mean, I've been doing this for probably 3 years. We've seen people consistently get better. And my one frustration is that I can't, some people are so angry about the situation, and of course, justifiably so. I mean, chronic pain is really a bad rap, that they're so angry that they can't hear me, and I can't get them to engage. And if I can get someone to engage or they want to engage, it really is just a matter of time. If they don't want to engage, the more I try to convince them that this is the right thing to do for them, they just get really, really angry at me. And what I found out the hard way that many people have become addicted to their pain and they don't want to let it up is a familiar pattern. When you're in chronic pain, you have lots of control of people around you. People in chronic pain control their families. They control people around them. They feel entitled. Those are all very powerful roles. And understandably, nobody wants to give them up. And so it's a very powerful role to give up being the victim of chronic pain. And so that's my one frustration that I really do not have an answer for yet.
So curious, do you ever use things, or have you ever used things like heart math or tapping or anything?
You know, those are things that they've heard about and I think are very, very valid tools. And I would say that my process right now is a framework. I think there's an infinite number of things that can be done to break through these different barriers. And that's why I'm completely open. I mean, this process evolves every month. For instance, about 3 months ago, I realized that the longer and harder you work on these circuits, the circuits are still running the show, right? I mean, if you try to fix yourself, and these are permanent pathways, the more you talk about them, the more you try to fix them, the harder they are to get rid of. So I have some people I pull off the website, pull off the book, say, look, pain pathways are permanent. In some ways, you're working too hard at this. The other pathways that are permanent are your play pathways. Almost everybody in life,
playing?
Play, P-L-A-Y, play pathways. So this is not in the book, because this is more of a recent rendition of my own thinking, and I'm challenging myself to do this, is that there's a time in everybody's life when it's pretty carefree. And those pathways are also permanent. And the process really involves just taking what you have, pain or no pain, and just enjoying the date with what you have. And it's a very powerful, rapid way of pulling yourself out of the abyss, is reconnecting with the best part of who you are. And generally for most people, play is a major factor in who you are. That actually sort of defines, I think, the essence of people, is when they're playing and laughing. And of course, in chronic pain, you tend to lose your sense of humor. And by the way, I'm doing a 5-day seminar at the Omega Institute in New York on the chronic pain process. It's called Rewire Your Brain Without Pain. I'm doing it with Dr. Fred Luskin out of Stanford, who wrote a book called Forgive for Good. And I know we keep getting distracted on the different stages of the website, but anger is what I call the continental divided chronic pain. And it's when Dr. Luskin's book hit my practice about 3 years ago that people started to go to pain-free. Because anger is the anchor that holds you back. Anger locks you into the pain pathways. The anger that people have in chronic pain is very, very legitimate. They're angry at the surgeon who screwed them up. They're angry at the person who hit them in the car accident. They're angry at the employer who caused the injury. And it's legitimate anger. But the problem is, with anger in general, the more legitimate the anger, the harder it is to let go. And what we found out, that when you can truly break loose of the anger pathways, which means love and acceptance, people get better. And Dr. Luskin wrote a book called Forgive for Good. Two of the research projects he did were with the parents of children who had been murdered. And what happens is that not only are your children murdered, and you justifiably hate these people that murdered your child, those people are in your head. And they're now, so the people you despise are now in your brain over and over and over again. And his point in his book is that forgiveness has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with you. So true forgiveness lets you off the hook, lets you move on with your life. And so it's been a wonderful conversation I've had with him. I've gotten to know him personally. And so the seminar is going to be focused on somatic work, on play. And my wife's a dancer. She's going to do somatic work. Dr. Luskin's going to do his forgiveness workshop. I'm going to be talking about things like we're talking about here on the radio, about the general relationship between pain, anger, and anxiety. But the whole week's going to be really focused on the play pathways. And just, look, get your sense of humor back, talk to people, and just move on. And so we're going to have a great time. So it's at the Omega Institute, New York, August 18th through 23rd. It's a 5-day workshop, and we're pretty excited about it.
And if somebody wants to sign up, where do they go?
On my website, on the homepage, there's a link to the workshop, but also the Omega Institute during that week of August 18th through 23rd. It's easy to register for it.
Excellent. So you've got about 7 or so minutes. What would you like to talk about?
I think the one concept that's really critical to understand is this word connection. And it took me a long time to figure this out. I thought I had this formula to really solve pain. And the pain psychologists I work with just said, look, this is about you connecting with patients, not about any type of formula. I go, look, it's not me, it's this process. But what I realized that it was only partially to do with me, and what happened through my own extreme process is that I thought I was connected to who I was, but I was more connected to my labels of who I was rather than who I actually was. As I went through a pretty extreme process, I got stripped of everything and became a true human being connected to the essence of life in general. And I talked to my patients completely differently. I'm much more aware of who they are, what's going on. I become aware of the labels I put on them, like everybody does, and I work on taking those labels off. And I can talk to people person to person. And what happens, I think, is that people all of a sudden remember who they are and start reconnecting to who they want to be again. And it's that just real basic conversation of just reconnection that makes the biggest difference. what happens with chronic pain, I think that the essence of connection is awareness. The opposite of awareness is anger. And right now, anxiety drives anger. Pain drives both anxiety and anger. Right now, we're in a very anxious slash angry society, and we're disconnected. And it becomes this loop of that as we become more disconnected, we become more anxious and angry. And as you become more anxious and angry, you become more disconnected. And by the way, chronic pain affects over 116 million Americans. That's one in three adults. So right now, so that's the background of what I want to say next is that modern medicine has not adopted this at all. There's very, very, very few doctors around the country that have adopted this. And anxiety driven by pain is driving this whole process. So anxiety is considered a psychological disorder. Medicine is actually a pathways issue, what's called a mind-body syndrome, using somatic tools, which are very prevalent in the alternative medicine world. People's anxiety calms down, they start getting better. So my personal message is to try to bring mind-body syndrome medicine into mainstream medicine. And until medicine gets a diagnosis correctly of anxiety being a mind-body syndrome disorder, as a society, this process just drives people's health in a very negative way, both mental health and physical health. So when your body is fired up, your body responds with corresponding chemical responses, muscle tension, etc. And so going after the root of the problem, which is anxiety slash anger, and look in terms of pathways, not psychology, we're not going to solve the problem. So again, simply calming down your system, using somatic tools, connecting your mind with your body, that's what's going to solve the problem.
So I'm curious. I imagine you see, and we've got about 3 minutes left, I imagine you see a lot of people that get addicted to these pain medications. Does
Correct.
This protocol enable them to get off of those addictive painkillers?
Well, I have one person who has done 1,000 milligrams of oxycodone a day, 900 micrograms of fentanyl, pain pump and a pain stimulator, 12 milligrams of Dilaudid and prednisone. All one person.
Wow.
He's off. He is off all his medications.
Really? How, is that all he did was do that?
Well, I mean, it took a couple of years. I mean, it takes some time. But, yeah, the answer is basically he calmed down his nervous system. For instance, sleep, just getting some sleep calms down your pain. So the medications, by the way, are the last to go. In other words, you calm down the nervous system first, then your need for medication disappears, and then you start rolling forward. So I do this backwards. In other words, I keep people on the medications. I'm trying to decrease the pain impulses to the brain initially. Then as the pain drops down, people's need for medications just disappear. So I never have to fight with medications with patients if they're involved.
That's wonderful.
That simply takes care of itself. Yeah, no, that part's been really remarkable also, because pain meds become a huge issue, and essentially they become a non-issue.
That's really wonderful.
Yeah,
I also sit on the board of directors of this group called the Alliance for Addiction Solutions. You ought to join our group, because we have monthly conference calls where we talk, and that would be great for them to know.
Yeah, no, I'd love to do that.
I'd love to be involved with that. Well, just go on the website and join Alliance for Addiction Solutions, because we try to teach people how to treat addiction and mood disorders holistically without drugs.
Right.
So you got about 2 minutes. Anything else you want to say? You want to give your website again and the name of your book?
Yeah, the book is Back in Control, A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. The website is www.back-in-control.com. The good news is about 90% of this process is self-directed. You don't need a major pain center. And then what happens is you understand the variables that affect pain, then your doctors and different providers become your resources. And once you take control of your care, then it's just a matter of time. I mean, as you all well know, that you get bounced from treatment to treatment to treatment with really some hope that keeps getting dashed. And so after a while, you basically give up. You have no hope. So there's a huge amount of hope. And, for instance, I'm giving a lecture at the Mayo Clinic in October called Enjoying the Management of Chronic Pain. And I've gone from a physician who has dreaded dealing with chronic pain like every other physician or most physicians to just absolutely being entranced. I mean, I just love watching people get better. I never in my entire career thought I would be able to do this. And actually, I can't. I can help and coach and cheerlead. I'm not doing this. My patients are doing it. But no, it's been a very exciting process. I'm very grateful to have gone through the experience and be able to share my experience with different people. So that's,
well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show tonight. It's great. And I'm just honor you for what you're doing. It's very important. I'm so pleased to see allopathic medicine find another path. It's great. Thank
you. Well, thank you very much. I really am very, very excited about getting to know you and what you're doing, which I think is wonderful. And I'm really excited about the whole process.
Thank you. Well, let's be in touch, okay? Because I have a lot of things I want to share with you. And I want to get your address so I can send you a new book about quantum mechanics. have
All
a
right.
good
well,
one,
thank
and thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you. All right. Bye.